True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Jesse Noel, Regional Director, Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority West. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Noel. Thank you so much for having me this morning.
So you have on the ballot a millage renewal for flood protection. Tell us about the importance of this renewal.
So in 2018, the voters on the West Bank in West Jefferson authorized a 4.75 mil tax to fund levee lifts and major maintenance on our three closure complexes. And we've put, since then, $23 million into levee lifts. So we've raised about 18 miles of levee, about 2 feet, which obviously helps the resilience of the system. And then those three closure complexes were brand new and shiny in 2012, and we work every day diligently to operate and maintain those structures, and making sure that we can close those structures. You know, one of them is the West Closure Complex. It's about 225 feet wide on the sector gate. We have the Harbor Canal Complex under the Lopalco Bridge, and the Bayou Signet Complex right behind the West Wego Shrimp Lot. And all three of those structures have to close for an event. It's extremely important that we can operate and maintain the system because I like to say to everybody down here at the Levee District, there's no second chances in flood protection. It has to work 100% of the time when we have a surge event coming toward us.
And that 4.75 mils, is that the only source of revenue that you guys have for these particular maintenance issues?
No, it's not. So we have a constitutional millage in West Jefferson and in Algiers that funds our day-to-day operations. And so we have about 50 folks who cut 80 miles of flood protection. So it's 80 miles of levees, flood walls, flood gates, and the three structures I recently said. And so that constitutional millage allows us to conduct our day-to-day operations. And this supplemental millage in West Jefferson makes sure that we can lift the levees and maintain those large closure complexes specifically. So it's dedicated to that purpose. It doesn't fund our day-to-day operations. We do have money for that, and that's what the millage is for.
And the 4.75 mils generates what in dollars?
About $6.1 million annually.
Everyone always has a mission or vision statement for the organization. As it relates to these dollars, what projects do y'all see that are critical to the services you provide that you need these dollars to fund moving forward?
So we're actively working on two reaches of levee lift. One is a 850-foot levee section in West Wego, and another is about a mile out in toward Waggaman. And then we're also working to dewater these three sector gates. And we say dewater, they're large metal structures that are painted. That paint degrades over time. And we have to blast and paint them and make sure that the metal's in good shape, because those three sector gates, for all intents and purposes, day to day, they're big holes in the system. You know, it's a 225 feet wide hole at West Closure and a 56 foot wide opening at Bayou Signet. And we close those gates for a hurricane and make sure that that hole is filled. And we want to make sure that those things operate. And that's what this money funds.
And that's critical. I mean, you said these sector gates are what, 13 years old now?
Yeah. Two of them are 13, and the Harvey Canal gate's actually been in the water for 20 years. It was actually in the water for Hurricane Katrina. And so they're aging. We know they protect something, you know, we're very proud of. We protect $41 billion in assets, and over 250,000 people live behind our system. And so when we're maintaining this stuff, this is what we're thinking about, making sure that we're keeping these people dry.
Jesse, the point I wanted to make is I talk about this a lot on this show. It's one thing to get dollars. Sometimes you get grant dollars if you're lucky and you're able to build this, and you build it. And a lot of folks forget about maintaining it. And, you know, these structures are only as good as the constant and most recent maintenance that's done on the on these structures, right?
Correct. Correct. And we, you know, we work diligently every day to maintain them. We exercise all of our complex structures every other week. So that's twice a month. And that's burning diesel. That's, you know, we need oil changes. We need to grease things. And we're making sure we're staying on top of that because, again, there's no second chances. And so we know that, and it has to work.
Yeah, and you believe in Murphy's Law, too, right? Because I do. It, when it breaks, it's going to be at the most inconvenient time. And you got to be prepared for it, right?
Absolutely. All the major maintenance we've had thus far always seems to happen in April. So just in the nick of time, we can get it turned around.
But that's better than June.
Turned around.
That's
yeah,
better than June.
It is better than June. It is indeed.
Jesse, when we talk about levee lifts, so you said there's an 850-foot section that you're doing in one area and a 1 mile. How much of a levee lift and how important is that levee lift based on what you guys are seeing that you're trying to prevent?
So the entire post-Katrina system was built to a plus 14 or better in elevation, and that includes the flood walls. But obviously the levees settle. Everybody in South Louisiana should know that. And so the levees are below that plus 14. We have about an average elevation of about 13.5, which is more than sufficient to protect against the design storm. But we have a couple of sections that are even lower than that. When we go back to do levee lifts, we like to add 2 or 3 feet of dirt minimum just to maximize the lifespan of that levee. And so making sure you're only as good as your lowest spot in the system. And that's why we're targeting that 1 mile section, that 850-foot section, because they are a little bit lower. And, you know, getting those up above, you know, if I'm going to lose, well, we have 47 miles of perimeter protection levee for the hurricane surge. I want to lose by all 47. I don't want to lose by 50 feet. And so we got to make sure all of it's as high as possible to make sure that if anything is going to happen on a massive event, that it's, you know, that we're high enough to try and withstand it.
And that's another issue that we don't often talk enough about. A lot of folks feel like we build the levee, it's there, it's going to be stable, it's not changing, it's static. But that's not true. I mean, those levees are completely dynamic. And in many areas of levee systems, not necessarily within your levee system, but I know you're aware of this, there are many areas where they've not done these levee lifts, and they're really kind of behind the eight ball right now, right? I mean, you know, when you're losing inches every year, it's tough. You got to stay on top of it.
Correct. And I like to describe it as when you build a levee in South Louisiana, you're building on top of a sponge. And as you start, that sponge is going to compress a lot. And over time, that sponge gets squeezed all the way down and it'll slow down. So you gain strength over time. But it is a sponge nonetheless, and it's going to keep compressing. And so we have to keep chasing that elevation, keep trying to go higher and higher to make sure that, again, the whole system is sufficient to withstand the storms.
And when you do levee lifts, that's almost as equally as challenging as building a new levee, right? Because the process that you use, you got to make sure that you're not creating any damage to the already existing portion of the levee.
Correct. The processes and procedures are exactly the same as building a new levee. The only difference is your start elevation is a little bit higher. And so you still have to do all the degrassing and compacting of the dirt and making sure it's of sufficient design strength to withstand the storm surge that will inevitably happen.
And then to make matters even more challenging, I don't believe that y'all have access to the levee to do this 365 a year, because when the water's high, you're less likely to go out there and do this type of work, right?
Correct. And you want to do it mostly outside of hurricane season. You're always dependent on the weather because wet dirt doesn't compact well. And so you need good dry weather to get it done in an adequate amount of time. And so there's a lot of considerations when talking about levee lifts.
Now, folks are saying there's going to be a very low turnout election. Early voting is going on now. How concerned are you guys?
Well, hopefully, we've been beating the streets. We've been talking to community groups. We've been trying to communicate via social media, make sure everybody's aware that the renewal is on the ballot, and it is a renewal. And we're hopeful that the folks that we have communicated with are the folks that are going to vote, and we certainly ask everybody to go make their voice heard. Go vote. Go make your voice heard.
Yeah, if you want to sleep at night during a hurricane and not have to worry about the structures out there, it doesn't mean it's 100% foolproof, but if you're appropriately maintaining it, you are eliminating, in my view, a lot of risk, and this is money well spent. Jesse Newell, thank you so much for joining us. We truly appreciate it. Best of luck to you, folks. Early voting's going on now. You can get out and vote through Saturday, I think, of this week, and then the election is on April the 29th. Best of luck to you, Jesse.
All right. Thank you so much, Newell. I appreciate you having me.
That's Jesse Newell, Regional Director, Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority West. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yep.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Welcome back, folks. Is the U.S. and the G7 ignoring a blatantly obvious opportunity to pay for the Ukrainian war? You heard me talk last week about an opinion piece in the New York Post authored by Yulia Zyskina for Razom, and she actually joins us. She's a senior legal fellow there. Yulia, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
So I really enjoyed reading your piece. There's not been a lot of conversation, at least that I'm aware of, about this issue. To me, it makes perfect sense. Since I read the article, it seems as though it made its way around and a lot of other people are beginning to comment on it. If you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, talk to them about how we end up with Russian assets in our banking systems and what we are legally entitled to do with them.
Sure, that's a great question, and thank you for asking that. So the state of Russia, before the full-scale invasion, invested its assets into the U.S. system. After the full-scale invasion in February 2022, the U.S. and the rest of the G7 froze those assets. So now they are sitting in U.S. banks. Total worldwide, there is about $300 billion. The U.S. share is about $5 billion. In April 2024, Congress passed what's called the Repo Act, which essentially gives the president the authority to seize and transfer those frozen Russian state assets to be used for Ukraine's benefit, whether that's defense, reconstruction, recovery, or any other need that the Secretary of State deems as appropriate. However, President Biden did not use this authority while he was still in office. But President Trump now has this perfect golden opportunity to do that.
So what was the hesitation? Why? I mean, it seems to me it makes perfect sense to use Russia's money to help defend Ukraine.
It really does make perfect sense. You know, the choice is between taxpayer money or Russia's money. It should be pretty clear. However, the official excuse from the Biden administration was that they wanted to move together collectively with the rest of the G7, which, you know, yes, in theory, that's a good idea. However, that really gives Europe a veto over what the United States does. That's not good policy. So by the U.S. taking this leadership move, it can force Europe to act with it. So it's Trump can do what Biden didn't, and that's to take a clear leadership role instead of waiting for somebody else to lead.
Has this been done before?
Yes, it actually has. While the circumstances weren't completely the same, this was done in 1992 when Iraq invaded Kuwait and occupied Kuwait. The U.S. seized frozen Iraqi state assets and moved them into the Bank of England at the time, where then they were dispersed through the U.N. Security Council to aid the victims of Iraq's unlawful invasion of Kuwait. However, here the difference is, well, we don't have the UN Security Council mechanism because, well, Russia sits on the UN Security Council. But there are other ways to do this. And we do have precedents and examples from history that show that it can be done.
It seems as though there may be some members of the G7 that are looking at this more favorably since your article was published. Keir Starmer in the UK is actually talking more about it. Rishi Sunak, the former prime minister there, applauds his looking at that and goes a little further and says that we actually have a moral obligation to do this. And I read his piece very closely, and I really agree with some of what he said as to moving forward, how we ought to go about doing this. And then the Russians reacted. And they talked about if this money is going to be used for the rebuild of the country of Ukraine, it should also apply to the one-fifth of the territory that we've taken away from Ukraine, and a proportionate amount ought to be spent there. There's no bounds to the arrogance of the Russian people. I mean, I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, the audacity
Your
is
thoughts.
Real.
I mean, it's like, I had to read it three times. It's like, what?
You're not alone in that. It's this incredible proposal. But Keir Starmer is right that this is a moral obligation, and it's recognized under international law that when a country invades another sovereign country, that they owe compensation. It's really as simple as that. The aggressor needs to pay. So this is an existing debt that Russia won't willingly ever voluntarily do, unless it's, like you said, they also use that money for territories that it occupies. But this money is within the control of countries that do uphold the rule of law. And we have that power. The U.S. has that power. The U.S. actually has a law that no other country does. So it's really up, as the leader of the free world, it's up to us to lead to get this done.
You know, it's a little disheartening because early onset we saw where they were, you know, seizing the yachts of Russian oligarchs, and it was all over the news. Everybody was making a big deal out of it, but you know that asset is de minimis as it relates to the hundreds of billions of dollars that are out there in other, you know, obviously more useful assets. Cold cash than the boats, and you didn't hear much about it. And interestingly, as well, and maybe you have, I haven't heard much about it as we talk preliminarily or talking through these negotiations. I think Trump's going to be with Putin tomorrow night, is what the most recent reporting reveals. Have you heard whether or not this is an issue that's been brought up through the course of these negotiations?
Well, it's been, no one's quite sure the details of those negotiations, but there have been some reports that the Russians are pressuring the U.S. for this money back, which, you know, is not unexpected. However, it would be disgraceful, to put it lightly, for the U.S. to give this money back to the Russians. That would be just, that would be handing Putin a Western bailout of the money that he spent on this war. What I think people don't also quite understand is that we would actually be paying for that bailout. And this is because back in fall of last year, the G7, including the U.S., fronted a loan to Ukraine of about $50 billion. The U.S. share was $20 billion. That is supposed to be repaid from the future interest on the frozen assets. So by returning those assets, the loan can't be repaid using Russia's money. So who repays? U.S. taxpayers. That's another reason why this money can't go back to Russia. It puts us on the hook.
Yeah, I just don't understand how anyone can stand before the citizens of the U.S. and characterize any part of a deal as being a good deal by us giving this money back to Russia. He's upside down in the polls right now, meaning President Trump, as to the way that he's handling this situation. I would think that this would actually put him in the tank on this issue. That U.S. taxpayers will be bailing Vladimir Putin out. I can't imagine they want any part of that.
You know, I think you're probably right. This measure has huge public support from all both sides of the aisle. There's really not much to argue with. You know, when you come down to the very principle, should we spend, you know, American money or should we spend Russia's money? It's really that simple. the Repo Act passed with a very clear bipartisan majority. I think even more Republicans actually voted for it. So it would be very unpopular for Trump to do this. But we'll see. And that's, I think that's why we need to keep having these conversations to communicate to the administration that this would be a hugely unpopular move.
And, you know, the audacity, as you said earlier, it really has no bounds, right? Because in reaction to the ceasefire, Vladimir Putin says that there's not enough conditions. So, for example, he wants to limit the size of the Ukrainian army. Wonder why. He wants to make sure that there's no improvement in armaments that are delivered to the Ukrainian army during the ceasefire. But meanwhile, he can continue to produce and receive from both North Korea and China weaponry, no restrictions on his part. And if there was, we have no way of policing and knowing whether or not he's getting them or not, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, it's just, I don't understand how we're going to manage what's out there. And they just basically want Ukraine frozen in time during this period, and they go on unrestricted. Don't get that either.
That's right. I mean, you one could ask a very simple question. Why would Putin want Ukraine to stop building its army, to stop training soldiers, and to keep building up its own army if it didn't plan to attack again? I think that's very clear. And the frozen assets play a huge role in this, too, because if the only way to get Putin to stop his war is to make him believe that there is no way for him to continue it. By keeping these assets frozen and keeping them on the table and potentially even returning them to Putin, that gives him an idea, saying, well, I could use this money to bolster a war economy, to create more military supplies and to keep the war running. But by taking those assets off the table and to use them for Ukrainian defense or Ukrainian reconstruction, that takes that power away from him. It's really one of the most powerful tools that we have.
Yeah. We're visiting with Yulia Zaskina, senior legal fellow at Razom. Yulia, this thought process, I just want to, the reaction of Ukrainians where they would cede more territory to Russia in order to bring about an end to this war. I can't imagine that's going to sit well with the citizens of Ukraine, right?
No, it's hugely unpopular. And Ukraine will never recognize these territories as Russian because they're not. Russia unlawfully annexed Crimea and unlawfully invaded the south and the east. Of course, we understand the need for a ceasefire and for peace. However, there really can't be peace until Ukraine's lands are returned under international law. There are people on those occupied territories that have been documented to be tortured, raped, and all sorts of horrible war crimes committed. And so we have those territories back. I think there will be no justice.
I mean, do you really believe, because I don't, that putting a peacekeeping force in Ukraine is really going to make a difference? I don't see it. I mean, I almost see this more of a, not exactly, but some semblance of what's going on in the Middle East right now. I mean, I just don't see overcoming a lot of these ideological battles over whether or not the sanctity of the Ukrainian border should be maintained or not. I believe the Ukrainians believe that. I would have hoped the United States would have believed that, because I like to put up myself in the Ukrainian shoes. I know if I was a leader of that country, it's like, no, I'm not giving up any land. Why? I've done nothing to Russia. They don't like that we're independent. I mean, they so we move forward. Are they going to like our independence even more and after having taken one-fifth of our land? I suspect not.
That's exactly right. Russia, unfortunately, won't stop at just one-fifth of Ukrainian land. It won't even stop at Ukraine. This is Russia's stated goal. And, Moldova might be next, Poland, the Baltics. And then after that, well, there's Europe. And then we are truly in World War III. So right now is our opportunity to nip this in the bud, to show that Russia can't keep expanding and can't keep waging illegal wars of aggression. You're right that Putin won't stop at just one-fifth of Ukraine or all of Ukraine.
And I guess the reason I should say that I don't believe in the peacekeeping forces there really being effective is that I think Russia is not going to, if the peacekeeping forces are there, they're not going to attack Ukraine directly. They're going to do so indirectly and through misdirection and creating issues relative to the governance of their country and being disruptive in other ways, many ways that they've deployed for the last 20 years, right?
That's right. You're completely right. That this isn't just a war that's being fought on land. It's also a war that's being fought in a hybrid way. So there have been numerous documented cyber attacks all across the world, including in the U.S. by the Russians. There's been interference with our political system and in other countries' systems. Russia has cut wires in the Baltics and in Finland, and it's fighting this war on many, many more fronts than just on the ground. And unfortunately, we're playing a game of catch up. And until we realize that, and until we fight back in a more serious way, Russia is going to keep beating us. So I think this is something that we collectively need to come to terms with.
So what do you think the next step is for Ukraine? I mean, obviously the meeting in D.C. did not go very well. I understand the emotions of President Zelensky trying to hold on to the territorial boundaries of Ukraine and others not understanding, I guess, all of the reason behind that. Get to the ceasefire. And then Russia turns it down. And we're still waiting, I guess, at the present time. The president's going to meet with Vladimir Putin tomorrow night. Be interesting to see what we come out with. But it hasn't been a warm and fuzzy thus far.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think Zelensky's in a very tough position in that, he's protecting his country. And wanting to do what's best for his country and, by extension, Europe and the world. What's next for Ukraine, it's very hard to say. We don't know what will come out of these U.S.-Russia talks. However, what's clear is that Ukraine needs to be a party to whatever is decided. So U.S. and Russia can't bilaterally together decide what's going to happen to Ukraine without Ukraine being at the table. So whatever it is, Ukraine must have a say. And Europe also has a role to play here as well. If Europe doesn't find the agreement between U.S. and Russia to be sufficient for its defense and for its future, Europe needs to step up. This is something that I do think the Trump administration did get right, and that Europe needs to build up its own defense in order to earn the seat at the table. So that's another part of this that I think we're not quite seeing yet, but I do think Europe is building up its own defenses and it's moving in a positive direction in order to claim that at the table. Because if you're not at the table, well, you're on the menu.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I mean, the simple basic premise of strength in numbers really applies here. It's why Ukraine, Finland, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and others have expressed, over the past several decades, their willingness to want to get involved in NATO, because that, you bring together more GDPs, it makes it a lot easier. But where we are right now is, I think, an interesting phenomenon, because most NATO countries financially are not in good shape. And, you know, where the numbers they're talking about on percentage of GDP to go fund their military is going to be a stretch for the strongest of those NATO nations. I don't know what the others are going to do. I think it's literally impossible for them to contribute that those numbers that they're looking for in order to really stand up against Russia without assuming that the U.S. is not standing side by side with them. I just think it's a difficult task. Real quick, your thoughts.
Of course it will be difficult, but to circle back to the beginning of our conversation, there's also 200 billion euro of frozen Russian assets frozen in Europe. It, just to put that number into perspective, that is about three times the amount of aid that the U.S. has sent to Ukraine in the past 3 years. That's a huge, huge number. So that money can be used for defense. It could also be used for reconstruction, which frees up some room for Europe defending itself as well. So this is a really, really important part of it. And if you really think about it, the 200 billion euro, that's Europe's greatest weapon in this war. It just needs to make the decision to use it.
Well, it's the most impactful because it's there, right? And it doesn't take
exactly.
any time. It exists. It's sitting right in front of their eyes. So, unlike a lot of aspirational stuff that we hear about each and every day. Thank you so much for joining us today. Yulia Zaskina, Senior Legal Fellow at Rizom. I loved your article. I've talked about it many, many times on this show, waiting for you to come on. And we thank you for taking time out to join us. And we appreciate saying.
Thank you so much. Glad to be on.
Thank you. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. So the Trump administration will be meeting with the Russian president tomorrow night on this issue of Vladimir Putin. So we'll see what the outcome of that is going to be. Obviously, it's a critical point, critical juncture in the negotiations as it relates to the ceasefire in Ukraine. A lot of different moving parts. I think that there's already been some unreasonable demands made by the Russians. We'll see how President Trump reacts to that. He really is doing a balance beam act at the present time, because the mood of the country is not with him on the manner in which he's handled this situation thus far. They have been trying to change that by saying different things at different times about comments that are being made. I think for most Americans, they're just more fundamental in their approach. You know, Ukraine is sitting there trying to succeed in the aftermath of an invasion in 2014. Under the Obama administration, where they take Crimea, which is a strategically important piece of land right there on the Black Sea, right? And nothing happens. And there's continued to be conflict and skirmishes throughout Donbass area, and then all of a sudden, Russians come across their border into Ukraine, and now we have an all-out war. We're taking down infrastructure, the country, large portions of it totally destroyed. It's going to cost a boatload of money to build. And yet, in order to achieve peace, they have to be the folks that give up the most. And I just think Americans don't see that as being fundamentally fair. And I always like to put myself in that situation. Now, the fact that the U.S. stepped up and provided assistance, and they may not have been able to achieve what they achieved without our U.S. dollars, well, it's not as though we didn't have a reason to do that, right? We were a little selfish in our approach, right? We kind of tied their hands, gave aid, trying to beat back Russian aggression. No one ever really believed that that was a good move on the part of Russia. No one today believes that they're going to stop at Ukraine, for the most part. They hadn't believed that for years. And yet all of a sudden, we're asking the Ukrainians to be sacrificial lambs. And I think that's where the public is. They just don't feel that this is fundamentally fair. And they don't really believe that this is the way that we should end conflict, by having them give up territory that others came in to steal. We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, when we return after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Stay with us.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games, or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.